the first slide is essentially just sharing my feelings at the moment in the situation we are. So many things are happening at the same time, which are worrisome. So that's perhaps how we should feel. But let's try to find some reasons for hope. And I should apologize for speaking in English. Dutch was the mother tongue of my father. Unfortunately, it was not transmitted to the next generation. So let me perhaps put that in slideshow mode. That would be more convenient for you. Okay, good. So what I'm going to do is to very briefly try to share some assessment of the situation and then talk about how we can seek solutions to the current predicament. And my talk is very much inspired by the work of the International Panel on Social Progress, IPSP, with whom I've been working for many years now. And we've produced a big report and also smaller books, which are more accessible to a wider audience, so in various languages, including indeed in Dutch. There is also a documentary movie that has been done around our work and is also interesting to have a look at. So let me right away talk about how we can assess the situation. So even though we can be very worried about many things now, we should not forget that we've come a long way, and that a lot of progress has been realized, especially since the Second World War. We've seen a tremendous economic growth, which has led not just to affluence in many parts of the world, but to a very stark reduction in world poverty, division by four of extreme poverty in particular, and also an increase in longevity, on average, improvement in health, so many more years of healthy life for people. Also, we should not forget that some decades ago, many countries were not independent, so we've had decolonization and a tremendous increase in the number of democratic regimes in the world. Globalization can be counted also as a bonus because it has connected people, it has reduced barriers in many ways. And along these lines, it's not just in the economy or in technological links, but also in terms of values. So one of the positive trends that my colleagues at the Panel on Social Progress have highlighted is the fact that values, if you look in the long run, values of inclusiveness and tolerance have followed an increasing trend. Of course, we witnessed some backlashes, some turnbacks in some parts of the world in some periods, but nevertheless, the long-term trend seems definitely on the inclusive side and toward a greater acceptance of people. And among these change in values, a growing recognition that we are just part of nature and we have to not to treat it as something that is disposable. This is something that is part of this growing consciousness of many things. Now, we are facing many challenges, and a way to think about these challenges is to put them into under three headings. One is the social challenge, the social cohesion challenge, due to several inequalities which remain important and have been growing in some cases. So inequalities within countries, but also the development gap, which has been closed by some countries, but not by all. And we can be very worried about the least developed countries not being able to catch up. And this is a source of tremendous suffering there, but also of international problems. And there are many sources of inequalities, and people worry a lot about technology. So I've put it on the slide here, but it's not the only source, perhaps not even the main one. But this is something that has a potential of being very disruptive in the future. The second heading, the second category of challenge is about the environment, of course, and there it's not just the climate, but also the mass extinction that we see, reduction in biodiversity, and pollutions of several sorts, which are very worrisome. And finally, we have a governance crisis, which is something that is happening in various parts of the world with some common points, growing distrust. And this is true in many countries in Europe. Even in the Netherlands, there has been some fluctuations in trust in government. It was not so good in the beginning of the century. Now I think it has caught up a little bit. and growing populism in many countries. The COVID-19 crisis is reinforcing some of these problems or highlighting some of the vulnerabilities that we had already. And so I won't go through the details, but just to highlight that many of these challenges are actually worsened or made more vivid by this crisis, including the governance crisis, where the distrust in government and government measures is growing in some cases. So this is supposed to be an interactive event. So I'd like to now have the audience participate. And I will stop sharing my screen, but I'll just explain before that. I'll explain the question I'd like you to answer through Mentimeter. So I've talked about these three challenges: inequality, sustainability, and governance. And I would like to ask you how important you consider these challenges to be. So it looks like maybe I don't have much to do. You can do, yeah, okay. So I don't have to stop sharing. And probably you can answer directly, and I let the organizers explain how you can join. There is a code on, yeah, right. So everything is on this slide over there. So thank you very much for answering. I'm not sure how long we should wait. I think we see the number of people who have answered. So Annette, perhaps you can give me a sign when you think it's we've reached the...
Yeah, with quite a large group, Mark, but almost 60 people have voted now, so I think this gives a
good,
quite nice...
Yeah, excellent. View. So yeah. Thank you very much, Martin. So that's very interesting, and it's especially interesting to see that governance is the lowest in this group. And that's really fascinating. Sustainability and inequalities are very high, and perhaps sustainability comes first. So thank you so much for answering. And now I'll restart sharing. Perhaps I should do it myself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Can you see my screen again? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, great. So, it's interesting that you suggest that governance is not the main challenge, because in a way it is the main challenge. If we think of the main obstacles we are facing, all of them are closely linked. And so let me explain a little bit very quickly why they are so interlinked. I mean, there is a strong linkage between social cohesion and the economic system, of course, but also the political system, and how all these systems adapt or react or handle the environmental problem. And this is true at the local level and at the global level. And migrations is another thing that I didn't mention explicitly so far, but can be a serious disruptor and caused by some of these problems. And so I won't explain this graphic in detail here, but you can see and guess the many loops that can stabilize the system in the good direction or can pull it down toward catastrophes. And so in order to assess whether we have strong trade-offs or synergies between these various dimensions, I think it's interesting to consider the possibility of hoping to obtain a viable solution by abandoning or being less ambitious on one of the challenges. So especially if you think of governance as being less important, I hear very often people talk about something which is here represented as the authoritarian scenario, which would be the idea of tackling inequalities and sustainability, but not being too ambitious on preserving democratic governance. Sometimes people call that the Chinese temptation, right? The idea that it's good to have a regime that has strong central authority. And so this is actually something that cannot work. And so this is about three ways to fail, because if we try that, at the end of the day, it will not work, right? Authoritarian regimes tend to be very repressive and corrupt, and in the long run, it's not likely to work well. You can also try to say, okay, let's not put sustainability at the forefront. So going against what your response is suggested, and say, after all, perhaps we can trust the current institutions, the market and democratic governance, follow Francis Fukuyama end of history narrative, and believe that technological innovation will save us from the environmental crisis at some point. So again, this is very unlikely to work. Perhaps technology will help us, but if we just continue business as usual, many predictions are very dire about the state of the environment, especially climate. And finally, let me not insist too much on the apartheid scenario, which would bet on keeping inequalities of development in order to preserve a sustainable management of the environment, because the least developed countries are emitting less pollution and less greenhouse gases, right? So again, this scenario cannot work, because if we don't tackle inequalities, and especially inequalities of development, we are in for a lot of geopolitical problems. So a few words about solutions. We have to, I think, if we look at these ways of failing, we have to try to address the three challenges at the same time. And of course, this is very daunting. One way to think about it is to look at the main institutions. But before we do that, I want to relate a little bit to the well-being focus that you have, especially in your country these years, about well-being. And just mention one thing, which is that well-being is not just about resources. And so when we talk about inequality and so on, it's not just about resources. It's also very much about at least two other dimensions. One is inclusion. So being part of society, being accepted, having a good social status, something, for instance, that unemployed people suffer very much from missing, but more largely, all the issues about multicultural diversity and these sort of things, all these things are very important as well. So inclusion is extremely important for people. And the other dimension is control. So control is about having a sense that you are leading your life, you have some autonomy, you can choose your way in life. And so this, of course, is held by resources, but it's more, much more than resources. It has to do with democratic participation and the way institutions are set up. And so if we look at the reforms that are needed, I think we can divide them into three types of reforms having to do with three types of institutions. So the welfare state, the business world, and politics. So let me address them one after the other. So the welfare state is, of course, something that over which people are sometimes pessimistic nowadays. A lot of austerity programs have been developed in many countries. I want to resist the view that the welfare state is under very strong pressure in a globalized world. I think the proof that this is not quite true is the diversity that we still observe. If there was really such a big constraint coming from the hyper-globalized world, we would see all countries converging to the same kind of lean welfare state. And that's not what we see. We see still a lot of diversity. This graph here is just illustrating the redistributive power of various institutions in various countries. And we see a lot of diversity. So if we have such a diversity, certainly there is some leeway for many governments. But I don't want to deny that there are no real pressure. Indeed, factors, namely capital, but also skilled labor, are highly mobile these days. Debt is a problem that is getting worsened by the current crisis. Aging is, the aging process is bringing many challenges for social systems and for the healthcare system as well. And the technological technological transformation is disrupting careers and requires reforming the education system and helping workers transition to new skills. So all these challenges are quite important. But we can still invest in the welfare state. And I won't have much time to develop that, but I want to briefly mention that it's important to remember that there are three ways in which the welfare state can be conceived, and these three ways should actually be taken as relevant at the same time. So the traditional way is essentially the idea of rescuing the losers, those who are failing in the economic game. The other philosophy, the other approach, consists in preparing people for the competition, and that's very much the third way philosophy developed by Anthony Giddens and Tony Blair in their times. The idea is investing a lot in human capital, education, health, and all that, so that people are strong in the economy. But there is a third dimension, which is very important and perhaps the crucial one we should develop now, which is thinking in terms of changing the rules of the game. So making the game more humane and producing less inequalities by itself. So this is something that suggests that we should perhaps abandon the label of the welfare state to talk about an emancipatory state, right? A state that really helps people become more autonomous. And one way the state can do that is to foster a change, a transformation in the business world, which is really not only the engine of the economy, but also the core of what develops the social structure, what gives people their social status and their role in society. Reforming the corporation is something that is very much in the air these days, and including in the business world, business leaders are talking about it. So this is a good movement. And it's important to understand that this is about reforming not just the mission of the corporation, so abandoning the shareholder value exclusive focus, to broaden that and think in terms of stakeholder value and beyond. But it's also about changing the governance of the corporation. And when I was talking about inclusiveness and control, that is very much something that is important in the economy through corporate governance. So more inclusive governance, participatory mechanisms, this is something that can really change people's lives. And finally, there is also a need in improving reporting in order to develop transparency on the business impact on various parts of society and the environment. So this is something that can be fostered by all public authorities at all levels, and also by civil society and various movements, including business movements. And the emergence of the Benefit Corporation, for instance, is something that came from the business world itself and is a very promising and interesting movement. But we should not be naive. Competition, the economic competition, is something that is praised by economists, and I'm an economist myself, but we should really understand that competition is good to eliminate the less productive units and to somehow select the best processes, but it is also a mechanism that penalizes the socially responsible and is favoring those who have less scruples than the others. And so this is really a serious problem. When you look at the Brexit negotiations these days, it's very much about making sure that we don't have a rogue competitor in our neighborhood, right? So this is very much something that is happening to all firms that try to be responsible. They face much less responsible competitors. So we need to find ways to level the playing fields for firms to make responsible management viable and prosperous. I mentioned politics as the other sphere in which we should intervene. So it's politics in a broad sense, and that includes very much local politics and all institutions where people need collective participation. And so here there are many things that can be imagined, but the general idea of enhancing participation and deliberation, including developing mini publics and citizens' assemblies and this sort of thing, is very much in the air these days. Another thing that is very important but a bit harder to handle, and where innovation is needed, is to stop treating the information system as a business, but consider it as a common good that serves a public purpose, which doesn't mean it should be a public organization, right? It need not be a state organization, but it needs to be treated as a common good, and this is very tricky. Reforms of the electoral system are not popular at all, because politicians who have been elected don't want to hear about changing the rules of the game that was good for them, unfortunately, because there are many reforms that could enhance the system in many countries, and there are many ideas in the academic world about how to have better electoral systems. So we should really look at that. And finally, the influence of money is sometimes very visible. I come from the US, where I've spent almost 10 years. And of course, there it is absolutely staggering. But in many countries, including in Europe, the influence of money is sometimes invisible, but is nevertheless quite important. So all this is about treating democracy, not just in the political national political system, but at all levels, from the local to the global. Democracy is really a common good, because it is something that enables the fair representation of all the relevant interests. And this is really something that is important. Of course, democracy has problems, but this is the only institution that guarantees a fair representation of interests. So the next topic I'd like to address, after having looked at solutions, the question is, who should do what? What actors can intervene, and what kind of what levers do they have to initiate the transformations? And that's where, with your permission, I'd like to ask you a question again, because I know that many of you are interested in action at the local level, the regional level, and so I would like to go back to the three challenges that I have mentioned: inequality, sustainability, and governance, and ask you if you think that things can be done at the local level or not. So how much can be done at the local level? Nothing on the left or a lot on the right? So thank you again for answering this question. Okay, I think we are good, Martin, right? Yeah, so thank you very much. So this is, again, very interesting. And it's especially interesting that governance is very high in the ranking here. All of them are somewhat high. It's not too surprising that inequalities are not very high, because many of the policies operate at the national level for that. Sustainability is tricky, because many environmental issues are very local, but some of them are very global. It's a mixture of various challenges. But I think you are very right, and a lot can be done, especially on governance at the local level. So that's very good. Thank you very much. And let me share again my screen. Yeah. And so,
Mark, let's just see very quickly if you can share your screen in such a way that we can all see the full screen of your presentation. Now we see the presentation mode. I'm not sure if you can fix that.
Ah, I see. Oh, sorry about that. Yes. Let me change that. Yeah. So that's not the right. I see. So this is this one, I guess. Let me try this one. Yeah, it's better like that.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. So as I suggested earlier, I think governance is really a key roadblock. And the way to think about it is that if we think that the vision of a better society in the future is very much about a more participatory society, this is something that is indeed very much about governance, but also something that cannot really be a top-down movement. It has to be a bottom-up initiative and pressure in order to induce the emergence of more participatory mechanisms. And this is not just for the sake of participation itself, it's also something that enables the various places and cultural contexts to experiment different things. When we, in the panel on social progress, when we thought about the ideas for a better society, we were very worried of not proposing something that would be a one-size-fits-all model, right? So every culture, every local context calls for different ways of implementing ideas. And this is very much something that is aligned with the idea of participation and decision emerging from the bottom. A key actor in this context is actually not so much politicians. I don't want to offend anyone, but politicians are not in the long run, don't seem to be the main source of transformative change. Civil society and pressure from society, including cultural change, seems to be very important. And we see the emergence of a lot of civil society organizations something that is quite promising, especially in the young generations, the very young, including at high school level, seem to be very engaged nowadays. One of the limitations of civil society, apart from the fact that in various countries it is under serious pressure from regimes that are growing more authoritarian, it needs scaling up. So in order to be more effective, it needs to operate at a higher spatial level. And this is challenging for many organizations. But coming back to political leaders can really be instrumental, maybe not in really initiating the long-term changes, but at least in seizing the opportunities and helping the initiatives foster and become crystallized in institutions, right? So the law can really condone and generalize and scale up initiatives which are promising. And so that, I will finish by this question about this old motto that you've certainly all heard, think global, act local. This is now no longer perhaps as relevant because the global and the local need to be put together both in our thought and in our action. So as you said in your answers, rightly, I think a lot can be done at the local level, not just at the regional level, but also at the very, very local level. Families can really change people's lives. Local businesses, associations, cities, they all have a lot of possibilities for innovation and can really improve people's lives. So in a way, we are in a paradoxical situation. We face very daunting challenges. We can be very worried about many, many trends. But at the same time, we've never lived in such a good period for humanity. And we are very close to have a good society, right? So and so it's possible for many people at the local level to essentially create bubbles of social justice, if I may say, and bubbles of environmental responsibility. Now, the problem is that many of the challenges call for global coordination. And there, I'd like just to highlight the fact that it's not just about intergovernmental action, which is not looking good at the moment, unfortunately, because of some countries not living up to their responsibilities. In fact, local jurisdictions and local organizations can really build up networks. We see interesting networks of cities, and we can imagine similar things of various jurisdictions happening, and associations, unions, and various parts of civil society. I think that's the hope for the future. It's really building up coalitions at the global level that unite all these organizations and jurisdictions and make them much more powerful. So if you look, for instance, at a country like the United States, which I know a little bit better than the Netherlands, when the federal state is not acting, various states and cities take up the initiative. And this is something that is happening in many places in the world. So we can really hope and bet on the role of local actors. So let me thank you very much. And I hope that in spite of the challenges we are facing, this brings a little bit of hope in our discussion.
Thanks so much, Mark, for that sketch, that very sort of...